Ever wonder how some research ideas like totally take off while others just fizzle out?
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're diving into today.
Cool.
We've got this paper, What's Your Identification Strategy? Innovation in Corporate Finance Research. Catchy, right?
Definitely.
But it's about this new research approach using some really powerful stats, to prove cause and effect.
Yeah, those techniques are everywhere now.
I know, right? But get this, this paper found a 20-year lag.
20 years.
Yep, 20 years between when these techniques took hold in economics and then when they finally caught on in finance.
Wow, that's a pretty big gap, especially, considering how closely economics and finance are connected.
That's what I thought. 20 years, it's like a whole career. So, like, what caused that delay? That's one of the big questions this paper tries to get at.
Makes sense, yeah.
But before we get into all that, can you give us a little background? What is this identification technology? What's so special about these statistical techniques?
Okay, so imagine you're trying to figure out if having a gym membership actually makes people exercise more.
Okay, sure.
Seems obvious, right? But like maybe people who are already inclined to work out are just more likely to join a gym in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's where these identification strategies come in. They help researchers figure out if A is really causing B or if it's something else.
Ah, so it's like a superpower for seeing the real story behind the data.
Exactly. And what's interesting is these really robust methods, they often pop up in other areas of economics first, like labor economics or development, before they ever get to finance.
Oh, interesting. So other fields were trendsetters, and finance was a little late to the party.
Yeah, a bit.
Why, though? You'd think if something's working, finance researchers would be all over it.
You'd think so, right? And that's part of the puzzle this paper is trying to, untangle this whole question of how knowledge spreads, even between fields that seem really connected.
That's a good point. So how did this identification technology spread? Did it just like suddenly become the big thing?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting. The paper maps the spread. And get this, they use the same model that's used to track technology adoption, like smartphones.
Wait, so you're telling me that like complex statistical analysis in academic papers followed the same pattern as like the latest iPhone?
It's pretty wild, right?
Yeah.
That same S-curve pattern, you see this slow burn at the beginning and then whoosh, rapid acceleration once it hits a certain point.
Okay, now I gotta know. Walk me through this S curve. When did things really take off in the finance world?
Well, the paper finds that once this identification technology, it hit about 5% adoption, which was around 1998, that's when things really took off. Like
Okay.
in just 2 years, it doubled to 10%.
Wow, 5 to 10% in 2 years, that's a steep climb. What happened? What caused that? I mean, researchers, they aren't exactly known for jumping on every bandwagon.
True.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit.
Well, I think it comes down to incentives. Researchers, just like anyone, we all respond to incentives.
Okay, so incentives are key. What were those incentives? What was driving researchers to, embrace this new approach?
Well, the study found that articles using this identification technology, they weren't like just sitting around collecting dust. They were getting cited way more often. They were
Right.
talking like a 22% jump in citations.
22%, that's huge. But for those of us who aren't swimming in the academic pool, why is that such a big deal?
Okay, so think of it like this. You've poured your heart and soul into this project, right? And then bam, it gets like recognized with this prestigious industry award.
Okay.
That's kind of what a citation boost is for researchers. It's instant credibility, more visibility, recognition, better chance of getting published in those, top-tier journals, all the things that really make a researcher's career.
So citations are like gold stars in the research world.
Oh, okay.
Okay, gotcha. But it wasn't just individual researchers, right? Something changed with the journals themselves too, didn't it?
You're totally right. There's another layer to this whole thing. Remember those journal editorial boards, those gatekeepers who decide what gets
Oh
published?
yeah, they have a lot of power.
For sure. So the study found that the makeup of these boards, it totally shifted during this time. More and more, you had members who were using identification technology in their own work.
So if you're like a young researcher trying to make a name for yourself, what do you do?
Right, you learn the latest, most cutting-edge
Up
techniques.
your chances of getting published. Makes sense.
Exactly. It's all about adapting, right? But what I think is so cool about this study is that it doesn't just stop at the numbers. It dives into the human side of research, too.
Oh, that's what I love about these deep dives. So beyond the incentives, what about the researchers themselves? Like, what kind of researcher was more likely to embrace this new approach?
Yeah, they actually looked at that. And this is where the findings get really interesting. Researchers with PhDs in economics, they were much faster to adopt these techniques than those with PhDs in finance.
Wait, hold on. Even though this was all happening in corporate finance research?
Yep. And it makes sense when you think about it. It's all about prior exposure. Economists were already trained in these techniques, so using them in finance research, well, it was a much smaller leap.
Ah, so they were already speaking the same language, kind of.
Exactly.
Okay, so what other factors influenced whether a researcher would adopt this new approach?
Your network matters a lot. Researchers who were already connected to others using these techniques, whether through, collaborations or just being at universities where it's becoming the norm, they adopted much faster.
It's like they say, it's not what you know, it's who you know. But for research. Which, when you think about it, that makes a lot of sense. If you see your colleagues publishing amazing work using a certain approach, you're going to want to try it too, right?
Yeah, it's the power of like social influence and all that.
Totally.
And no surprise here, younger researchers tended to adopt it faster than their more, let's say, seasoned colleagues.
Yeah, it makes sense. They probably had more recent training and fewer ingrained habits to break.
Right. But here's the thing about those more senior researchers.
Yeah.
They weren't content to just be left behind.
Okay, so what did they do? Did they like go back to school, brush up on their stats?
Well, some might have. But the study found this really fascinating trend. Senior researchers adapted by teaming up with younger, more statistically minded researchers.
Ah, so everyone wins. The younger researchers get the clout of working with a big name, and the senior researchers, they get to stay relevant, embrace new methodologies. I love that.
It's a great example of how collaboration, across generations can really drive progress.
Totally.
Oh, and here's another interesting tidbit. Having a PhD from a top-ranked university, it didn't actually predict faster adoption.
Really? That's kind of surprising. You'd think those folks would be like leading the charge.
Right, but it was the ranking of the institution they were working at the time that seemed to matter.
Interesting.
Yeah, researchers at top-ranked schools, they were just faster to adopt this new approach, regardless of where they got their PhDs.
So maybe it's less about what you learned in grad school and more about the environment you're in now.
It's a good question, right? Does a top-ranked institution, do they attract the early adopters? Or do they somehow foster a culture that encourages researchers to try new things faster?
Chicken or the egg?
Exactly. But I think it shows that the environment definitely plays a role.
It really makes you rethink this whole idea of best practices, you know? I mean, we're talking about all these new methods, rapid adoption, but did the research itself actually change? It wasn't just like, do this one thing and you're good, right?
You've hit on such a crucial point, and it's actually what makes this study so insightful. This idea of best practices, it's not static. Even those can change and evolve over time.
So it's not enough to like have a best practice. You got to be constantly checking, making sure it still holds up. Kind of like those researchers had to adapt how they use these new stats, right?
Exactly. The study found that how researchers actually use this identification technology, it wasn't like set in stone. It got more refined over time. They weren't just applying the same thing over and over. They were learning as they went.
So it's more of a process than just a set of rules, almost like a natural selection, but for research, survival of the fittest techniques.
That's a great way to put it. For example, like those tests, the ones to make sure the instruments they were using were actually valid, those didn't become common until later on.
Wow, so you almost have to wonder how much research, especially in those early years, might have gotten it wrong. Just because the best way to do things, it was still being figured out itself.
Yeah, it's something to think about. It shows how scientific progress, not always a straight line. There's twists and turns along the way.
Okay, so we've gone deep on this one study, how a new research approach took hold in finance. But let's zoom out for a sec. What are the bigger lessons here? Why should, like, someone who's not a researcher, why should they care about any of this?
This study looked at corporate finance, yeah. But I think the takeaways are much bigger than that. It's about how innovations spread in any field, right? Could be a new tech, a new way to manage a team, even a new way of teaching.
So those factors we talked about, the incentives, the networks, even those early adopters, that's all at play no matter what you're doing.
Exactly. And I think this is a good reminder to always question those assumptions, those best practices in your field. Are they really the best? Or could they be better?
Always room for improvement.
Right. And this brings me to my final thought. So this research was in academia, kind of a, controlled environment. But imagine these same things happening out in the business world.
Oh, interesting. So you're saying businesses could be slow to adapt to new ideas too, or that even the best way of doing things, it changes over time.
Exactly. So I'll leave you with this. What are the parallels you see in your field? What are the incentives there? Who are the gatekeepers? And how can you be on the leading edge of change instead of just, following everyone else?
Ooh, those are good questions. We'll be thinking about those for sure. Great stuff. Well, on that note, that's our deep dive into academic innovation. Until next time, stay curious, everyone.